I feel good.
Dad, are you singing to your cereal?
Come on, Ava. Silk almond milk starts the morning on a high note.
Silk almond milk.
With calcium, vitamins A, D, and E.
Feel plenty good.
This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We bring in Damian Woody to continue this conversation, and this portion of the show brought to you by Fidelis Care. All right, Woody, you just, I'm sure you heard that little piece there, and I know you've probably already heard what Trevor Lawrence said with Dan Patrick, and maybe even saw the Rich Cimini story about him talking to five prominent agents who, a couple of them, would suggest that it would be malpractice to not look into a trade, and one even saying there's a huge stop sign for me if he would end up with the Jets. You played here in New York. You also played against them, but still, you know what it's like here. Is this a big stop sign for you? Would you look at this franchise right now, where they are, if you're a guy like Trevor Lawrence or if you're representing him? And I know we've talked about this before, but let's continue it. Would you feel like, you know what, I don't know if that's the best place for a guy like that. It could be a black hole for him. He could disappear. He could struggle. Look what happened to Sam. What are you thinking right now when you hear all the stuff being said?
I think all of this noise is absurd. I mean, listen, there's been plenty of other bad teams that are number one. I mean, we talked about the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, one of the perennially awful teams, you know, in our league. And nobody, we didn't hear any of this chatter last year about, oh, Joe Burrow should avoid the Bengals because they're the Bengals. And no, it was Joe Burrow was clearly the number one, the best quarterback, the likely number one pick, and he was going to the Cincinnati Bengals. And that's that. I just think that there's this, the Jets have basically become a punching bag. There's, you know, a national punching bag by a lot of people out here who want to raise a lot of noise about something that, to me, is just preposterous. If you really look at, I always say, if you really look at the Jets from a macro perspective, there's a lot of things to like about where the Jets are headed right now. You've got a general manager in Joe Douglas who's cleaned up the salary cap, got a ton of draft picks in the next couple of years, got some building blocks on the roster that looks very promising. So if you're a quarterback, say a Trevor Lawrence, who wouldn't like a Mekhi Becton, protecting your backside, or Denzel Mims, who you could possibly be throwing it to? You know, LaMichael Perrine, you know, another rookie that, you know, although he's been hurt, he's, you know, a guy that has some promise to him. Like, it's just, to me, it's a bunch of noise and it's nonsense.
So, you know, like, D-Wood, what this reminds me of, when a lot of followers are in an area and the cool thing is to, like, jump on one narrative and they don't want to seem like they're not the cool kids and they want to try and jump on, and whenever they have an opportunity to take a shot at the organization, they take a shot at the organization. Because, I mean, when you look at the Jaguars, right? Would Trevor Lawrence want to go there? Not only would you be bad, you'll be in a small market where you won't have an opportunity. Look at that, all the people they ran out of there. Guys that demanded that they got out of, whether it was Jalen Ramsey, whether it was Fournette, whether it was A.J. Bouye, whether it was Yannick Ngakoue. Guys just don't want to be there. You don't see guys running here. I know Jamal went over here, but that was because his greatness didn't time up with the winning schedule of the organization. Do you think that Joe Douglas has to make some early moves early in free agency, well before Trevor Lawrence in the draft comes, so that he can show them that, hey, it's going in the right direction? And how important is it, no matter what the cost is, that they get the coach that they want, no matter how much it costs?
Well, listen, I think a couple things here. I think number one, and I've addressed this on Twitter, social media, I think the Jets franchise is at a crossroads. I think it's because we've seen like this narrative, this punching bag of the Jets organization. It is imperative that the Jets get a CEO-type coach. No more of these quarterback whisperer type coach. Oh, let me get a defensive-minded. They need a guy in here that can legitimately be a face of the franchise, who knows what the hell he's doing, and who can implement a coaching here that can get this thing turned around. Because right now, I just think this time is critical for the Jets. They can turn this thing around quickly, but you got to get the right guy in here that can manage this situation with the Jets. Again, I'm going to repeat. They got a ton of cap space. They got a ton of draft picks. The ammunition is there to turn around. They need to hire the right coach that can oversee this whole operation and not just one side of the football.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence could be their Russell Wilson, right? Remember what the narrative was for the Seattle Seahawks before they got Russell Wilson. They had Matt Flynn and all those things trying to reach to try and find a quarterback. But when you say that, I wonder, does that mean a first-time head coach? Or does that mean going out and maybe trying to entice a guy like Bill Cowher? Maybe going out there and trying to find one of these retreads out there that can start some stability, whether it's Leslie Frazier or one of these guys that's been out there that's doing a great job as a coordinator but has been a head coach in this game. I mean, is it a Jason Garrett? I mean, who knows? Is it a guy like Jason Garrett? Is it somebody that can just steady the ship and be competent and be able to sell the team and the narrative on being pros and steady the ship? Or is it somebody that you have to go out there and try and get Eric Bieniemy or go down there and get the guy that's the offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans? When you say stability, do you need a proven commodity?
I need a guy who's been there and done it before. I need a guy who's been a head coach. I think for me, my personal
Josh McDaniels?
No first time head coach. I just don't like that scenario for the Jets. I think the Jets need a guy that's been a head coach before, that's seasoned, that knows how to operate, that's not scared of being here in New York, and you need to bring that type of guy here for this franchise. You can't mess around. To me, you can't mess around with a guy who's never been a head coach, whose specialty is one side of the football. The Jets are at a crossroads at an organization right now. They need a guy who's done it, who's been a head coach in this league before, in my opinion.
See, Woody, you and I completely agree, because it's that CEO, it's the face, it's the leader, it's the front man, how important that stuff is to this franchise, and it's unique to this franchise compared to others. I think others, you can go in that direction and you could be fine, but I do think here that's something that is lacking and they need that. And you and I both completely agree on it. And if you make that hire, it can change the way people's outlook. And then what you do in free agency can lead into the draft, and then you get that momentum that you're looking for. But I want to point something out that is also in this story by Samini, and that is an agent saying that you don't need the New York market anymore. The days of Broadway Joe are over, and a guy can go anywhere, and it doesn't matter. And I'm like, to an extent, but the difference between Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence in New York playing for the Jets, you can't convince me that that's the same exact thing. In fact, I'll point this out. You, Bart, and several others played here in New York. Now, it might not have directly led to what you're doing now post-career, but I do feel like it had to have some type of an impact, because the Jets have a broadcasting tree that's pretty damn impressive. Again, you're on it. Keyshawn, Herm, Tannenbaum, Vilma, you know, Bart, Woody, you, Sanchez, Boomer Esiason, Rex, St. Tim Tebow, Greg McElroy. I keep going if I can. You tell me if I'm wrong about that.
I'm going to make this really clear. There is nothing like winning in New York. Nothing. If you win in New York, you are a king. You are a king when you win in New York. And this coming from a guy that won two championships in New England. And I can tell you firsthand, when we were rolling those two AFC championship games, those 2 years, there was no better feeling in the world. The energy that was in New York was insane. And you're right. There's, like, Jacksonville doesn't even compare. Like, you win in Jacksonville, who cares? Who gives a damn? You win in New York, man, all the lights and everything are shining on you. So just from a competitive standpoint, why wouldn't you want to be here and try to compete and turn this thing around? Could you imagine if you're Trevor Lawrence and you come to the New York Jets and you are part of turning this franchise around? Man, you won't have to buy another thing ever again in New York City. Mm-hmm. Like, don't run from the challenge. run towards it. Like, there's nothing like playing in New York City. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah. He'll be hosting Saturday Night Live, man. He'll be so national with things that has nothing to do with football. But I want to kind of walk this exercise out. And I'm gonna name some head coaches that potentially may be available that has been there, done that. And you just tell me yes or no. All right, Jason Garrett.
I'm gonna say no.
Okay, the hometown boy, Dan Quinn.
No.
Okay. Anthony Lynn.
No.
Leslie Frazier.
I've thought about that one. I'm on the fence on that one, Bart. I'm on the fence. I'm going to say no for right now, but I'm on the fence on that one.
Jim Caldwell.
Now, that one intrigues me. That one intrigues me.
Why?
He won in Detroit.
That in Detroit.
And you know how hard that is. One intrigues you and me, I both know that.
And trust me, I played Detroit. So I know like how hard it is to win in Detroit. And we see what Detroit is now after Jim Caldwell left. So that one is intriguing to me.
All right, Josh McDaniels.
He's never leaving New England.
Mm-hmm.
Especially not for the Jets. He's not doing that.
Bill O'Brien.
He going to trade all the picks that Joe Douglas got? Hell no.
He can't. That's not his job. No. His job is just to coach.
Just to coach?
Yes.
Listen, I'm going to say this. The man did win 4 AFC South titles.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we talk about Bill O'Brien, we talked about Bill O'Brien, the GM. Bill O'Brien, the coach, did win 4 AFC South titles. So think about that. Okay. He's not going to be the GM. Right. We're talking just coach here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Matt Nagy.
Oh, okay,
if
go
he
ahead.
Gets let go, Matt Nagy, Nagy. If he gets let go, relieved of his certain duties.
No, you fail with two quarterbacks. No.
It's right. Amazing how many coaching candidates we're coming up with. I mean, this is a long list, and you there's a lot of no's here, which I find really interesting. Yeah. I have a.
But you know what? There's one I want to revisit though.
Okay, all right. Before you do that, let me give you another name that could be available, and that is Doug Peterson.
I could see that one. Listen. I mean, obviously, GM and coach have worked together before. They've been in the same organization, so
I'm trying to find synergy.
I'm trying to find the synergy. Only thing I worry about. How much was it, Doug Peterson?
How much was Frank Wright?
When Frank Wright left that organization, something changed.
With Carson.
Something changed.
No doubt.
Yeah, something changed. So I would need to find what happened when Frank Wright left?
What about getting it right the first time with Doug Marrone? They wanted him before Doug Marrone.
And a little media interaction put an
end to it. Yeah, and it's oddly enough that guy is no longer around.
He doesn't even have a credential, right?
Doug Marrone is intriguing too. He's a local guy. He's a local guy.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Absolutely, from the Bronx.
Okay. Yeah.
Right, so who's the guy you wanted one. To – who's I, the guy – oh, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is the Jason Garrett one. I might have to rethink that one.
Oh.
I might have to rethink that one.
Why?
Because Dallas is a pressure cooker. As much as we talk about New York, Dallas is even more of a pressure cooker. More eyes on Dallas. Okay?
It's the only show in town.
We talked about Jason Garrett. Like, he didn't get them over the hump to the Super Bowl. But he did got them to postseason trips. He did do that.
All right, so we got.
He's
been in the big seat.
Now, if we go into the college ranks, would you see if you could do what it takes? It's Pat Fitzgerald, right, from Northwestern.
Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern.
Would you do what it takes to see if he'd be interested? He's been a guy that a lot of NFL teams have kept an eye on. Remember, he turned down the Carolina job, at least to interview for it. He turned it down. But would you look there in that type of a scenario? I know you said you don't want first-time coaches. You want CEOs, but this guy's very impressive out in front.
He is. There's two guys in college that I would, with all that I said, that I would seriously consider. Pat Fitzgerald and Matt Campbell. And I know Matt Campbell turned down a job last year. But I would come back at Matt Campbell again.
Interesting.
Those are the two guys from college that I would, like, try to make a run at. Because those guys, they fit the description of what I was talking about as far as culture and program builders. Like, they know how to build a program. That's what the Jets need right now. They need a guy that's a culture builder, program builder. Those guys fit that. So, out of the college ranks, those two guys for me.
All right.
Not Jim Harbaugh? Not Harbaugh?
Man.
Nah, stop it. I was on the Harbaugh train before Gase when it was open. You know, when Gase came around. Mm-hmm. Now I don't think so.
Okay, and we actually had somebody go to @Barton Hahn and say, "How about Marvin Lewis?"
Nah, hell no. Nah. Listen, you talking about somebody doing?
Hold on. Now, I was on Twitter advocating about Marvin Lewis. And I know Bart, I already know how Bart feels. I'm just going to put it out there.
He can't get your team over the hump. He's just
Let me finish. Hold on. Cincinnati is one of the most challenging organizations to coach in. I think people got to have perspective when they look at Marvin Lewis. Before Marvin Lewis got there, after he left, and the things he had to deal with during his tenure there. I think if you look at the whole picture, it makes sense. It can make sense.
Okay. I have one last one.
Think about this. Marvin Lewis won 4 AFC North titles in Cincinnati with Pittsburgh and Baltimore there.
He won no playoff games. I came in the league.
Went to the playoffs 7 different times. in Cincinnati.
Listen, I was in high school, came out of high school, went to college, came out of college, played in the NFL, left, and he still didn't win a damn playoff game.
But that's not – listen, everybody – that's one thing everybody's going to talk about. I get it. Everybody, look, he's 0-7 in the playoffs. I understand that. I get that. But, again – look at where the Bengals were. I ask all our listeners who are listening right now, go research what the Bengals were before Marvin Lewis got there. Like 10 years prior, they
Peter
were
Wark.
Atrocious.
Yeah, Peter Wark and all
they
those dudes.
They were atrocious, okay? Then look at what the Bengals were after Marvin Lewis has left since then. Atrocious, okay? They've been just god-awful. Marvin Lewis turned that program around. Part of culture building.
So counterpoint.
Building.
So counterpoint, Wood. He had arguably the best coaching staff in football. He had Hugh, who was just a quarterback's coach. He had Zimmer. He had Jay Gruden.
Right. But you know what? That means he knows how to put together staff. He knows how to coach his coaches. That's a good thing.
And with that, he still didn't win.
But you can't, like, listen, I get it. I understand that. He didn't win a playoff game. But I'm looking at the whole picture here. Not just hang my hat on, oh, he was 0-7 in the playoffs. This dude, when we're talking about changing the culture, building a program, look at what he did in Cincinnati. It is undeniable that he built – and change the program with the Cincinnati Bengals. Think about that. The Cincinnati Bengals, one of the last in stock in the National League, he had them respectable.
All right. Now, I'll have one more name for you.
I'm going to say this is my last thing. Are they just respectable right now? Yes or no?
That would be a no.
Are they the last in stock in the league right now? Yes
or
no?
That'd be a yes.
No, they are.
So you expect history to repeat itself. I'm going to drop the mic on. He lost to T.J. Yates.
Okay. Because we're running out of time. I sound like Lethal Weapon. Okay. But seriously, one last name, because I'm dying to get your reaction to this one. And Bart's not allowed to speak.
Okay.
Because you already know what I'm going to do here, and we already know how you feel. All right, Woody. How about Rex 2.0? Why are you laughing?
Oh.
You're talking about a culture changer. You're talking about a guy who's in front of the room, guy who's done it here. Would you or would you not? And I know it's personal because you guys are in the studio. I get it, but.
Can you go back home?
Has that ever been done before, to hire a guy twice?
Joe Gibbs.
Yeah, Joe Gibbs did it, but obviously Joe Gibbs okay. had trophies in the case, but yeah.
We got FCG.
Here's what I'll say about Rex. No question, when Rex came in, Rex came in and gave the organization juice. There's no question about that. I think the biggest thing with Rex is what type of offense is he going to run? That's number one. And number two, I think Joe Douglas got to be the guy picking, let Joe Douglas build this thing out as far as personnel and roster.
Right.
Those to me are the two biggest things if you're talking about Rex.
Yeah, stay out of player personnel. Right.
Yes, just stay out of that. Let Joe Douglas do his thing. Because I think that was part of the downfall of Rex. He just got too much involved in that area and just missed on guys. And, when you start missing on people, it ultimately come back to bite you. So if he just lets Joe Douglas do his thing on that and pick a hell of an offensive coordinator, I think that'd be intriguing to me.
Love it. Woody, this was a lot of fun. This was good. A lot of Jets fans were like, they were texting us. They were calling us. This is the kind of thing that we like to do. And it's amazing how many names we came up with, but even more amazing how you had a take on just about every single one of them and good reasons why or why not. This was a lot of fun. Thanks so much, as always. Will we get to you, Nick? Will we get to talk to you? Probably not. So have a Merry Christmas, and we'll catch you on the other side.
All right, man. Happy holidays to you guys, too.
Hey, Bart, do you think it'll really freak people out if we, our first show, once we are on the national platform, January 5th, that I just go like thick New York accent?
Yeah. I want you to go. Brooklyn Baller. I want you to go
like
Brooklyn Brawler.
Straight, just straight like John Travolta, Saturday Night Fever, absolute knuckle dragging New York accent that will have, they'll be diving at their radios in the Midwest.
Absolutely. So if you do that, then I'll go John Weatherspoon. Bang, bang, bang. You gotta coordinate.
What did they do? Oh my God. Percy's in Brooklyn. What's up, Percy?
What's going on, guys?
How we doing?
Maintaining.
Percy. All right, good. What do you got?
Oh, no. I was listening to you guys earlier, and when Bart was talking about the lyrics on the song, it made me think about how my mother used to listen to Let's Get It On.
And I didn't even realize
the name of what she was talking about. She was
really
singing
trying,
the song, and I'm like,
baby.
So my favorite song when I got older was The Juvenile. There we go.
Back that thing up.
But back that thing up. My mother used to get mad when I used to listen to it. But I'm like, now I got older, I'm like, yo, we've been listening to the same kind of music. So
I know, right?
Related to you, Bart.
Hey,
definitely related to you guys.
You didn't have nobody coming over in a conversion van, did you?
Uh-oh.
Because he's like,
no.
With a little shag in the back.
All the pimps back in the early 80s and 90s had a conversion van with that TV in the back. It was like that two TV.
Yes.
And every time I look at Barry White, I was like, I know he got a deuce and a quarter. And I know he got a conversion van. You know what I'm saying? Pull up and it's all suede in there and stuff like that. God. And then the back seat lets out to a bed. Like, nah, man, they do come over with that conversion van. No, mama, get out of mama.
Bryce in Long Island on the Knicks Cavs game last night. What's up, Bryce?
Hey, what's going on, Alan?
How are you doing?
All right. I had heard you mention a few guys that didn't play for the Cavs last night. Garland and Drummond played. That's how
I'm in the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they weren't out there for the fourth. Drummond was giving it to Mitch the whole, like, in the beginning. Mitch had a hard time
Absolutely.
With Drummond. Yeah, no, they weren't playing the. What I was acknowledging was because a lot of people, of course, are quick to jump on me if I ever utter a positive word about the Knicks. Is there like, you know, whether it's just a preseason game or they weren't even playing against anybody. So I was quick to say, no, fourth quarter, I get it. It was basically a G League game, but you still have to like what you saw from some of those young guys. So I was just making that acknowledgement that, you know, there was no Drummond out there in the fourth. There was no Garland out there in the fourth. Okoro was out there, but. Bottom line, like, you know, I enjoyed watching the young guys play, and I'd rather enjoy watching something that I think is going to build to the future than guys that I pretty much know in a couple of months will be former Knicks, right? Like, that's how I feel.
One more quick question. We have a guy, I feel like we got to start quickly, man. I feel like Elfrid Payton's more of like a triangle point guard. He comes down and sets the offense up.
They just can't really
shoot. I need somebody that's going to push that ball.
Yeah, I you know, we'll see if they'll. I don't know if they're going to elevate him that quickly. And thanks for the call, Bryce. But I just think he showed you enough to want to see more. That's the most important thing. He had an opportunity, he took advantage of it, and he made you want to see more. And I think we will. So that remains to be seen. They'll play again on Friday night against those very same Cavs. It'll be the last preseason game. We'll see where it goes. Right now, Bart, let's get into audio files.
The audio file.
So Brian Cashman was on the Michael Kay Show yesterday, the holiday show. And it's a good question, you know, because as you know, the Yankees and DJ LeMahieu still have not come up with any type of agreement. And there's some talk that there's a distance between the two of as much as $20 million and that some other teams might start swooping in here. So the guys asked Cash if he's hurting his leverage with DJ.
No, I mean, how do you not acknowledge it? You know, when we signed LeMahieu, nobody saw it coming. You know, no one was even asking about it. And, you know, clearly the focus was on other free agents and bigger names, and that kind of snuck up on our fan base, and everybody was kind of shocked by it. But, like, last winter when we were going after Gerrit Cole, it was obvious, you know, and so just not to state the obvious would be kind of silly, too. I don't know how I'd navigate if we're going to be on the phone for 20 minutes or more. How do you navigate answering questions about the obvious? You know, it's not easy, so might as well just run to it and just acknowledge it. It seems it's a simpler, easier way to go about it. Everybody knows our fans want him. We would like him. He'd like to come back. You know, it just comes down to the dollars and cents and the competition that's involved, whoever they might be.
Bart, what I don't like about that is the Yankees are talking dollars and cents about a guy that they want. Explain this to me, please.
Yeah, well, he has to be careful because he doesn't want to tell DJ that he has a blank check and he can come in and write it. So if they're $25 million apart, Cashman will look at it as a win if he gets it when they're $12 million apart and they meet in the middle somewhere as a gentleman's type of bet. They're always
talking budget about an important player, though, Bart.
Yeah, but
come on.
Listen. But yeah, you can't just say, okay, you want this, here you go. That's why the negotiations are. And sometimes fans look at time as a bad thing. It's actually a good thing because you're letting them do his due diligence, offers, counter offers, and that's just part of the process. And at the end of the day, I think the Yankees get their man no matter what, because I think, you know, Cashman's under orders. By no means you let this player get away from us.
Okay.
He makes everybody else better, and if we get injuries like we've had over the last couple of years, he's a guy that counts for not just one player, he counts for two or three because his ability to play multiple positions and his ability to be clutch as well forces, you know, lets Judge off the hook, lets Stanton off the hook, because this is a guy that we know we have confidence that he's going to make the right baseball play when it's in one of these pivotal crunch moments. And that alone are the intangibles that you pay a little extra for.
We shall see, but it's uncomfortable to hear Brian Cashman talk about dollars and cents and how an important player they're having a hard time coming to an agreement with. Hate that. All right. Speaking of a player that has to come to an agreement, James Harden did play in a preseason game, finally did speak to the media. And I remember Tim McMahon of ESPN did this very interesting story all about how James Harden pretty much is allowed to do whatever he wants in Houston, and that's become part of a problem there. And now he wants out. Well, Harden did speak with the media, and that included McMahon. And this was a very interesting back and forth about him not being a camp.
James, what was the point that you were trying to get across when you went to Atlanta and Vegas when training camp was starting?
I was just training.
What were you training for?
In the start of the NBA season.
How did going to Atlanta and Vegas
I was training.
Help you there when the Rockets were starting training camp in Houston?
Just you know, my personal trainers.
Yeah. Yeah. Personal trainers?
So
is that what you call it?
I was there carb loading so I could have enough carbs to make it through the first month. So I was eating as much as I could to kind of store these chestnuts so I could have energy. So don't talk about me. This was the last day of my training cycle, and I wanted to make sure I finished it because it was an 8-week training cycle. You know what I'm saying? Me and Lil Baby had the strippers, so I was making sure that my thighs were strong enough so I could handle the lap dance.
I was training. There's boy, video of you.
No, but old boy, like, for what? But that's after the training, though. That's nighttime. That's after. I train bright and early in the morning.
Oh,
I don't know what you're talking about. You know what I'm saying? Just because I'm trained don't mean I can't have a little extracurricular activities.
I love the BS translator. When you turn on the BS translator, there's nothing better. There's nothing really better than that. All right, last but not least, speaking of, this was a straight up. This is one of the great stories, and it really is very typical. So Ray Allen on the postcast. And he's telling a story about one time he remembers when Joakim Noah was a rookie and KG is playing against Joakim.
Yeah.
And they had this moment on the court, which generally happens. A young player going up against the vet and kind of like
big ticket.
Yeah, he's sort of like, yo, like, you know, and he wants to talk to him and stuff. And it's just a typical KG response, and it's just epic. And boy, I don't know if you've heard this. But I know you're going to love this story that Ray Allen tells it. So take a listen.
I told a story about when we were playing the Bulls, when Joakim Noah was young and he was AG backed him, turned around, a pump fake, step side. He shot the ball from the baseline. And it was a move I seen Kev work on a lot. Next time down the floor, Joakim Noah said, he's like, big fella, that was, you know, that was a great move. How did you, I need you to teach me that. And KG was like, man, get off my, you know, like, you know how KG is.
Right.
And I was just sitting there. I was at the free throw line. I'm listening to this. And I'm like, I said, he's creating a monster here.
Have you ever seen that happen on NFL field or anything like that where a young player is like trying to like, you know, appeal to a vet or a star and just be like, yo, like, yeah. I love your game. Like, and the vet is just basically just backhands him, like, man, get out of here. Like,
bro, I got my. Well, it's just a little different than in football because
obviously,
offense, defense, but like in basketball, your offense is defense, same players. So you can appreciate it because you run around with him all day. You know what I mean? But, you know, you hear people like, you know, ask for autographs or, you know, can I get your jersey after the game or like all that type of stuff. But never that. KG is classic with that stuff, though. Like, KG is funny, though, because everybody has a nemesis. I remember hearing Kenyon Martin saying that, like, he would have beat the hell out of Kevin Garnett. How he used to, like, be trash talking Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett never said nothing back to him. And he backed it up with video, too. So even as ferocious and crazy as Kevin Garnett was, remember the whole thing with Carmelo with the Cheerios and Carmelo showing up in the back trying to get that action at him. But, you know, Kenyon Martin was that dude that even KG didn't want no smoke with.
Yeah, it's like pick and choose your targets.
It's like Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley. Like, nobody messed with Oakley.
Those two messed with each other in practice a number of times, though.
Yeah.
And those were ones you didn't want to get in between them.
No, who was the one that Oakley smacked before the game or something because they owed him some money? Was that Xavier McDaniel or something?
No, it wasn't David McDaniel. No, it was,
because he owed him some money.
He actually did. It was in Cleveland, and he did it during a shoot-around.
Shoot-around, yeah.
I told you the next time I saw you, if you didn't have my money, I was like, I'm in practice right now. Like, one of the great stories
try to put that falling down the stadium steps. Rinse, do mother. You conscious. Yeah. Get up.
But still, that just shows you, KG in a game, that kind of intense. Outside the game, I'm sure he would have probably worked with the kid, but it's just a great story by Ray Allen we wanted to share.
Let's get a little extra money in your pocket.
Cheese and sour cream on the taco.
This is Lunch Money.
All right, week 15 begins in our Thursday night game. We got Saturday games, by the way, also this weekend for the first time in the season. Thursday night game tonight is the Chargers at the Raiders. Let's get our team that we'll put together for Thursday Night Football. And this wasn't easy because there are some injury concerns, and there's always the budget to deal with. So we came up with this. Our MVP is going to be Eckler. He's been fantastic. Then we'll go Hunter Henry. We'll go Aguilar, who's been pretty good there. Jacobs.
Aguilar? Yeah.
He's pretty good.
You know what's crazy? The sub story. I know we're going to put our names.
Jacobs and Waller are the other two, and that's our team. Go ahead.
Because I'm looking at really Paul Gunther is gone. He's fired as defensive coordinator.
Yes.
And these Chargers, man, you look at the fact that, you know, also the Raiders have four starters out tonight. So they don't have a lot of their defense, and it's already a horrible historical defense, gave up 35 yards. So if you can go get Hunter Henry, I mean, I know Keenan Allen may be hurt too, but, man, it's going to be some opportunities on that side of the ball. Now, I don't know what David Carr is going to do because they're playing for something. But, man, when I look at that Raiders defense,
Justin Herbert could have a pretty good day too, right?
So Sherbert Herbert.
Now let me ask you this: the line is Raiders minus -3.
Ooh.
How you feeling now? By the way, over under is 53.5. Thursday night, man. Light it up.
It's gonna be some points. Ooh. It could look like the Monday night game where nobody can't stop nobody.
Would you take the over in this?
I would.
Yeah,
I would. I would take the over, man. I think it's going. Listen. It's tough. It's tough because they're divisional opponents, but so are the Ravens and Browns. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Chargers are going to be able to put up a lot of points. We're just going to force the Raiders to open up, air that thing out. Whether it's to Aguilar, whether it's to Ruggs, and we don't know. Like the thing about Nelson Aguilar, we don't know if he's going to catch it. He's not
Ruggs.
Waller.
We got Waller on our team. He's down the middle of the field. Yeah,
they don't have anybody that can match up with him. And if Nelson Aguilar can actually catch the ball, maybe put a little stickum on him. He reminds me of the dude from Little Giants that couldn't catch it, so he had to imagine toilet paper.
Are you saying you'll take the Raiders in the three, or are you going to take the Chargers? I mean, take the points with the Chargers, or are you going to lay the points with the Raiders?
I'm going to take the Chargers, man.
Chargers.
I just Anthony, they've been in tough games outside of the Falcons. Okay. No team has lost worse. Than,
you take the Chargers. I'm going to take the over. Let's do it that way. All right? We'll play it that way. Quickly, Joe Judge speaking right now. It seems to be Daniel Jones trending in the right direction to play against Cleveland. I mean, now think about this, too. They can't practice. You know, they're doing everything remote now because of what happened with, of course, the storm today as well. But now with Garrett testing positive, they got a contact trace. There's not really a lot of time for them to get any work done. But you're going up against Myles Garrett and that defense. And
talking about burping a baby, he better not hold on to it long. It better be, the Ben Roethlisberger ball out in 2.1 seconds.
All right, let me just, because we're getting the tweets on it, I just want to make sure we always like to, at the end of the show, tie everything up with a bow. It was Tyrone Hill. Thank you, everybody, for the tweets when it comes to the who did Oakley seek out in a
morning
shoot-around.
Ain't nobody did nothing. Man, like, how you going to mess that face up anymore, man?
That's a good point.
Don't mess up Tyrone Hill's face, man. Him and Sam Cassell, man.
He has a perpetual stink face.
Yeah. And remember that joke? Who did that to you, Tyrone? Ain't nobody did nothing.
No, it's not. Don't do that.
You remember that? I know.
We can't end the show this way. We cannot end the show this way. It's a snow day. We hope everybody stays safe. Take your time shoveling out. And Bart, of course, we got a big football Friday tomorrow, so can't wait. I'll see you tomorrow.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.